1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
You are listening to
In the Public Interest.
On KTSW.
San Marcos.
San Marcos.
Hey everyone, you're listening to San Marcos KTSW in the Public Interest. My name is Carmen De La Garza.
And I'm Taylor Zavala. And today we will be talking about exploring natural resources, aka gas and other natural resources, how we as humans are affected by them, what exactly they might be, and how they're important to us and why everyone should be aware of natural resources.
So some might ask, what is natural gas? According to dictionary.com, natural gas is a mixture of hydrocarbon gases that occurs with petroleum deposits, principally methane, together with varying quantities of ethane, propane, butane, and other gases. It's a fuel that's used in manufacture of organic compounds.
So in other words, it's a fossil fuel that is highly flammable, odorless, colorless gas made mostly of methane. It's odorless and non-toxic and gaseous because of the mixture of hydrocarbons that are located within the resource.
So some facts from alientarykids.com about natural gas is that it was formed deep under the earth about 100 million years ago. There are more than 2.1 million miles of underground gas pipelines across the U.S. More than half of all the homes in the United States use natural gas, which is almost 62 million families. It's lighter than air, and an interesting fact that I saw from 1816 was that it used to be used for light street lamps in Baltimore, Maryland, so it's been around for quite a while. And used in our lives.
And I remember as a student being taught that natural resources that are considered non-renewable were first created during the Big Bang Theory, so that's why they're actually considered non-renewable, because they can't be recreated. But some things natural gas does do for us that we don't think about on a daily basis could also be that it keeps us comfortable and produces warmer air to heat your home faster than electric heat pumps. It's reliable because regardless of the weather, natural gas is more dependable than an energy source. And it's convenient and gives us a supply of hot water, precise temperature control for cooking, and faster drying time for your laundry.
Yeah, and it's what almost everyone talks about, you know, because we use it for our cars and our trucks to get around. They're like, oh, have you seen the gas prices? Or, oh, I have to go fill up with gas.
Exactly. And since gas prices have dropped incredibly, it's all that everyone has been talking about. And I know a hypothetical question that we have is, why are the gas prices so low? And to answer your question, here is Aubriana Johnson with her story on decline of gas prices.
For much of the past decade, we have seen gas prices remain at its peak. The reason being is because of the oil consumption by countries like China. Oil production countries such as Russia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela also benefit from these high oil prices. These countries need these prices to balance their budgets. Another reason for soaring prices is because of such a high demand, which made it hard for oil production in conventional fields. If there is a weaker demand for oil, prices will stay low. But with prices being as low as they are, it only attracts more attention and causes more demand. This could only lead us right back to the higher prices we started at. According to Bankrate.com, an analysis of government petroleum statistics suggests that each driver in America stands to save about $452 on gas in the year 2015. These prices have given Americans much to cheer for, but for businesses like gas companies, this could promise a downfall in finances. With gas prices so low, many of these companies won't be bringing in enough money to keep the business afloat. The Wall Street Journal stated that consumption typically rises when weather improves and people start driving more. It's safe to say that seasonal trends play a big role in oil production and demand. Global head of energy analysis at the Oil Price Information Service, Tom Closa, says the national average retail price could rise to about $2.50 a gallon in the spring as demand rises ahead of the busy summer driving season. According to Vox.com, Saudi Arabia, the second largest crude producer, has agreed to continue production and have shown no signs of raising prices. With doing so, this means that Saudi Arabia will have to cut back on some of their social programs. Although this decision means financial trouble for Saudi Arabia and a few other countries, it has changed life around for U.S. citizens and has lowered gas prices strenuously. Even though there are, in fact, negative effects beneath the surface, the decline of gas prices definitely has its positive effects. Gas prices in San Marcos currently have an average of $1.83, with the lowest individual gas price springing in at $1.75, and the highest price just a quarter and 8 pennies more. In opposition of businesses and companies, these declining prices benefit students and residents of San Marcos most. These are people who have to pay for gasoline out of their own pockets, which takes away from their personal budget. This makes life much easier for many. For Melissa Foreman, a San Marcos resident, these low gas prices have made way for easier opportunities to handle her responsibilities.
I have more money to do more other things that I need to do, pay more bills, and be less stressed out.
Foreman also states that eventually there could be a negative effect in regards to the country's debt because of such low oil prices.
I think either way, it's all going to be bad. I think that eventually it'll even out.
Foreman is not the only citizen who has benefited much from the decline of gas prices. Rent-A-Center manager Rick Gonzalez says that the decline of gas prices has made it easier for his customers to use their money towards their accounts established with his company.
Our customers are able to do a lot with their accounts here, a little bit more. Makes our life a little bit easier with the customers walking in and making their renewal payments compared to higher pay on gallons for gas.
Not only has gas prices made life easier for Gonzalez's customers, but also for his company specifically. Gonzalez says that before prices declined, his company was spending more money on putting gas in their moving trucks for deliveries, and they were having to gas up the trucks more frequently throughout the week. Things seem to have changed now.
It's about once a week right now here at the store for both vehicles. Usually it's around 2 or 3, but right now it's about once a week.
It seems as if everyone is just reaping the benefits that have come along with lower gas prices. But like Foreman earlier stated, Gonzalez also believes that this glory could come with a side of negative impacts on the country's finances.
I'm pretty sure at some point it will, so I guess we'll just have to find out.
As of right now, there is no say-so on how long we will be able to enjoy these low gas prices, but it looks like U.S. citizens are making the best of these prices while they are here.
Thank you, Abriana, for informing us on what's currently happening with gas prices. It's nice that we're actually below $3 with gas prices as before when we were past it.
And oil prices are falling steadily, but also specifically by 25% more because of changes in the world supply and world demand. According to Stephen Moore's article from The Real Reason Gas Prices Are Falling, America has become, in the largest several years, the energy-producing powerhouse. So the latest gas prices have been a relief to American workers and motorists. These lower oil and gas prices are equal to $200 billion cost savings to American consumers and businesses. And thankfully, it's simple economics, you know, with a supply rising, there's obviously going to be a demand rising. So hopefully everything works out.
In that article, U.S. has become the number one producer of natural gas, but oil production in states like Oklahoma, Texas, and North Dakota has doubled in just 6 years.
And oil is one of the primary accelerators for us, which means a lot of fracking is being done.
You know, I didn't know what fracking was when I was younger. I thought it was something like bad, but then I learned that it's actually hydraulic fracturing. It's also fracking for short.
And obviously with this high supply of natural gas being used for hydraulic fracturing, it's no wonder that the demand is steadily increasing.
Which leads us to our next story about fracking, what it is and how it works, and a lot more.
So here is Sarah Duran with her story, What the Frack?
What is hydraulic fracturing? In simpler terms, what is fracking? An issue known worldwide, but what about closer to home in San Marcos? When asked, some had no idea.
I have no idea what it is, but it just sounds bad.
Fracking? Oh, well, that's a bad thing. I mean, who would like chemicals in their water? I know I don't.
I would think it has something to do with rocks, probably.
Rocks. It all starts with a rock. A hydrocarbon source rock called Marcellus Shale. Marcellus Shale is an unconventional source of petroleum that, when extracted and refined, can be used to produce fuels including gasoline, kerosene, and diesel oil. However, to obtain this petroleum, you will need to drill down as far as 10,000 feet underground. This is where hydraulic fracturing takes place. Introduced in 1948, hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, was used for well stimulation, but developments in newer drilling technologies have paved the way for advanced extraction. According to an Eagle Ford Shale Play Educator resource, fracking involves the high-pressure injection of more than 1 million gallons of water, sand, and chemicals down and across into a horizontally drilled well below the surface. The pressurized mixture causes the shale to crack so that the natural gas from the shale can flow up the well to be collected. Although there are no fracturing wells located near Hays County, the state of Texas is nonetheless heavily supplied. Multiple producing wells from Eagle Ford Shale Play can be found in over 10 counties south of Hays. In most recent years, the shale play has become a tremendous source of gas and oil, creating an economic boom. Many Texans have benefited from new wealth and job growth. However, gas production by hydraulic fracturing has raised a number of concerns. Many environmental groups have concerns regarding water use, methane leaks, and groundwater contamination. Because fracking takes place at depths greater than drinking water aquifers can be found, contamination is usually not an issue. Texas State Senior Lecturer Dr. Renee DeHaan says that if the wells are properly installed and regulated, then the process is safe.
Usually this is several thousand feet below. A lot of stuff in between which this doesn't interfere with, doesn't mix with. Now, you can cause contamination if the injection well is not completely sealed, so it passes through water zone, stuff leaks out into the water zone, or if the return wells leak into the water zone. But that's not a very common occurrence. It can happen rarely, but it's not a very common occurrence.
Another factor to consider is the local economy. Economic benefits tend to include full-time jobs, an average paycheck of $600 to $700, and increased property values in boom areas. But what happens in a bus? Texas State Senior Lecturer Don Heemner says many Texas towns have cycled through boom and bust.
So I suspect in 10, 15 years, maybe sooner, when you drive through Cotulla, there's going to be a bunch of boarded up, multi-story hotels because there's nobody going to stay in them. And same thing in Gonzales, Carn City, all these little towns have rapidly expanded car dealerships, you know, to sell because oil field workers do make good money.
Oil production has also created cultural effects on these towns. When thousands of jobs are added due to a boom, workers will move to cash in with little housing. Often referred to as man camps, many workers live in RV parks located next to drilling sites. But what are following these camps? Heemner says that these camps tend to have a bad reputation.
Well, what follows the man camps are prostitution, drugs, strippers, bars, all these things these small conservative towns were opposed to but can't stop. But if you live in one of those towns and you have a business selling to the oil company, you probably aren't. You might complain about it, but you're making tons of money off of it at the same time.
Either way you approach hydraulic fracturing or oil production, positive and negative impacts will always be present. Heemner added that he believes that fracking will never escape Texas, and industry experts agree with continual predictions of petroleum extraction growth in these South Texas counties for many years to come.
Thanks, Sarah, for that awesome story, What the Frack.
Interesting article that we're looking at right now from San Antonio's WOAI News 4 is Fracking Polluting San Antonio's Air, How Federal Officials Have Been Taking a Closer Look in Health Risk of Oil and Gas Fracking.
It also mentions a study showing that pollution is coming from the fracking going south, so now researchers are trying to measure how much ozone and harmful gases are blowing up from the Eagle Ford Shale area in San Antonio. And specifically, when you look at a lot of Texas's wells and where they're located, most of them are actually located in North Texas. And there's even the statistic going around that Texas wells make up almost 40% of all U.S. wells being used for hydraulic fracturing. But specifically, computer models are also showing that fracking is contributing to San Antonio's harsh ozone levels.
Oh yeah, and then Dave Sullivan is one of the researchers from there. He had even said that the instruments that measure oxides of nitrogen, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide are the ones that are causing the ozone levels to go up. And just by hearing carbon monoxide, I was like, that can be really dangerous, you know, because it can really harm one.
And Omar Garcia, who's president of the South Texas Energy and Economic Roundtable, recently said that operators are actually trying to reduce productions and running more machinery in natural gas. He said that the oil and gas industry is one of the most technologically advanced industries in the world, so you are seeing a lot of proactive measures being taken by the industry.
Well, since he does represent the 13 of the largest drilling companies, he knows, you know, what he's talking about.
Yeah, but I'm sure it'll somehow affect the water system, since Eagle Ford Shale uses more water for hydraulic fracturing than any other shale company in the country.
There was actually a statistic from OAOA.com. There had an article, Water Scarcity Brings Risk to Fracking, that from January 2011 to May 2013, 19.2 billion gallons of water was used. So you can only imagine how much water has been used now that we've entered 2015.
And I know specifically with the way that hydraulic fracturing works, it's this high pressure water combination of chemicals and cement is like thrown down into the well at these incredibly high pressures. And that's how the natural gas is extracted. But what a lot of people aren't talking about is the fact that that water that is pressured down into the well is no longer reusable due to the methane levels that are contracted within the water itself. And a lot of individuals throughout Texas are getting really concerned about this water being shot into near water tables, especially like super close to cities and where communities get a lot of their water from. So I know we're seeing a lot of suspicions with that. But I know San Marcos has its Edwards Aquifer, which is incredibly important to us residents. And luckily, hydraulic fracturing isn't happening here, even though San Antonio is right around the corner.
And well, we have our final story on how even though we are having fracking going on in Texas, not to be worried of our water system. Here's Matthew Hamill with our final story. Fracking, non-issue, river system is strong.
Gas and oil play a huge part in Texas's economy. For decades, the black gold hidden deep in the ground of Texas has driven jobs, corporations, and opportunities to the Lone Star State. The methods of extracting this crude oil from the ground can be extremely harmful to the systems in the surrounding environment. Drive through Luling, Texas, just 25 miles southeast of San Marcos, and you can smell the sulfur in the air, a stinky byproduct of oil wells. So how safe is the San Marcos River from the harmful effects of oil drilling and fracking? Very safe. Luckily, San Marcans and those who live above the Edwards Aquifer don't have to worry about fracking or other oil drilling, and we owe that to glacial movements that took place 14,000 years ago. As a glacier crawled through Texas, it left a hole in central Texas, vacant of oil. Professor of biology and ichthyology specialist Timothy Bonner knows that in order to understand the complicated river system that is the San Marcos River, you have to go back and study its origin.
To know the effects on a river, you have to know, get some idea of what it looked like before it was affected. So we pulled together a lot of the literature. We are tentatively accepting, based on the evidence in front of us, that this river is maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 12,000 years old.
Bonner has been studying the San Marcos River for over 14 years. Understanding this complex system required studying the history of the river, revealing many things, among which a very surprising truth about some of the discharging that took place.
This was in the 1907. In the 1930s, there were signs up saying, do not swim in this water. It's human fecal matter in this water.
Increased urbanization in this area has had a massive influence on the San Marcos River and its wildlife, as the system has been dealing with urbanization for over 170 years. According to Bonner, the system is doing well.
In my opinion, this system is very resilient. Here is a little tight ball of about 100 years of not much change. But overall, our final conclusion is, given 170 years of urbanization in this system, we were surprised that this system has withstood that quite a bit.
When looking at a map of the San Marcos River, you can see that the river moves from north to south, and Interstate 35 runs over the river, and then a little farther south is the Cummings Dam. In this southern section of the river, the water is deeper, yet there are less fountain otters, fish, and plants. Is there less life here because of the runoff from Interstate 35, or because of the dam.
And it's not I-35. We do note a difference to Cape's dam. I go out to other systems, and I've been in similar type systems a little bit further west. Same length, and we'll find these spring fishes all the way down. This is an anomaly. This is an underperforming stretch of the river reach, and we wanted to know why.
Bonner elaborated on the reason why, stating that these bare surfaces are inhospitable for plant life, and the flow of water means these surfaces will stay bare. The lack of plant life means there are less fish in this part of the river, as there are fewer plants to eat, which also means there are fewer predators of the fish in this area. The small dam affects the river system in a way that yields far bigger repercussions, ecologically speaking. Too much silt and construction runoff can be harmful. It can cover up plants and suffocate them, fill up the gills of a fish, and it can cover up a fish spawn and destroy a new generation of fish. Bonner explains how the sediment is crucial to the San Marcos River.
It's what we would call an aggrading system. Sediment just slowly goes in. That's the reason why I don't want to stop sediment. It needs sediment, just not too much. Is that at Cape's Dam, upstream of this, you've got a broader stream channel and a lot more silt. And I think that it's no longer has enough sediment. It's a sediment-starved reach. And this is pretty common what dams do to downstream reaches. No plants, no silt, no plants to grow on. That's the reason why we don't have the abundance of fish.
The San Marcos River system is strong as well as adaptable and is very similar to other systems around Texas. These systems are delicate and can be severely altered by development and urbanization. They can either run dry, be chlorinated and therefore poisoned, or they can continue to run as a sustainable ecosystem. Bonner cites a specific example of a worst-case scenario.
To us, the San Antonio River represents the worst-case scenario of an urbanized spring system. But right now, the water you see is not from springs. It's from wastewater because the springs have been all pumped. The groundwater is being harvested first. So we can destroy this river by looking at what they did to the San Antonio. We're nowhere near that just yet.
The main recreational use of the San Marcos River is tubing, and this activity is relatively harmless to the river and its inhabitants. The tubes and tubers float along the surface and do not disturb the plant life and fish. The only real harm comes from litter.
Not that I have set up and properly tested it, but I have no evidence to support right now that the level of recreation that we see in these systems is detrimental to the populations of existing fish in the system. Based on what I can see, most of those people sitting on tubes and going down. You've got Soul Park with a lot of activity, which is a pretty small stretch within the whole community of the endangered species.
The impact the study is seeking is on a population level. Though individuals may be harmed, the population as a whole is relatively undisturbed. Bonner's study was to determine if urbanization decreases fish life and plant life in the San Marcos River. This decrease is known as urban stream syndrome. The study has found that the upper San Marcos River, the section north of the Cummings Dam, is an exception to urban stream syndrome. This can change if the river is abused. Though San Marcos River has survived to this point, it is because of careful city planning and ever-evolving conservation methods. The river will not be perfect forever, and it's up to San Marcos and its people to continue to help preserve and sustain this amazing system.
And a great shout out to Matthew for his story. A lot of these stories are reminders of present day effects and implications and possibilities for the future. And specifically, we need to just stay mindful for our natural resources, including our wonderful springs.
And we want to thank you, everyone, for listening to our IPI segment. Be sure to listen to next week's segment, which will be on the price of growth, with our other In the Public Interest producers and hosts, Judith Prieto and Malcolm Gibbs.
And be sure to follow us on all social media sites via Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KTSW News. Again, I'm Taylor Zavala.
And I'm Carmen De La Garza. You are listening to KTSW's 89.9, The Other Side of Radio.